This is Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast number 184. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. This episode is an interview with Kim, Dave, and Freeman Burt titled Marietta PD, You Will Respect My Authority, and is being released on Tuesday, November 5, 2013. This interview with Kim, Dave, and Freeman Burt was recorded on Monday, November 4, 2013. In our continuing discussion regarding law and human rights, we're back with Freeman Burt and Kim, and this time we're joined by her husband, David, who's just been released from jail. Dave and Kim and their two children, Macy, 17, and Zachary, 13, have lived in Murrieta, California since June of 2009. David is a class of 1993 graduate of Southern College of Optometry in Memphis, Tennessee, and has been in private practice in the Murrieta community since 2001. Kim is an RN graduate of St. Joseph Hospital School of Nursing, class of 1994, and recently completed Nutritional Therapy Practitioner School in June of this year. The Dortch family has loved the Murrieta community and thought it was a wonderful place to raise the family until the law enforcement presence in the city started to become out of sync with the actual level of crime. They could have never anticipated the sequence of events that started on the 14th of March this year. Who could have known that an average American family that loves boating and camping and hiking would be targeted as a result of warrantless internet spying? And this episode is a continuation of episode number 183, titled Targeted Individuals, Tyranny, Child Trafficking, and Racketeering in Riverside County. And a link for that episode may be found on the site. And Freeman Burt's website is onlyfreemen.com. And you can also find the episodes for this specific topic on the Gnostic Media website by just going to slavesanonymous.com, and that will take you straight to that page. And the Dortch family is in need of donations for legal support. Please click on the donation button for this episode, and you can send donations directly to the Dortch family. And they have been going through a lot and have had to pay out thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to fight this insanity. And donations. This episode is brought to you by Thomas, Mark, John, Stephen, Lewis, Oscar, Brandon, Scott, Ulf, Stefan, Tad, Max, Paul, and Joseph. Thank you all for your donations. And while we do our best to provide just about everything here for free, your donations and website purchases are what keep this unprogrammed going. And I ask that you sign up for a membership or make a donation because we cannot do it without you. And we also accept Bitcoin donations. Please also check out the store page on the website where you may order the Wheat Blows bumper stickers, which you can put on your fridge and your cupboards to remind yourself not to eat the wheat, and also bookmarks that have the logical fallacies on the back, and books, the Gnostic Media Archives, and I'll get that fifth year set out here soon. I'm going to have to figure out a new way to put it out to all of you, and the DVD that we were using before is no longer large enough, so we might have to use jump drives or something. And also the She Who Remembers archives are up there, a DVD, the Gnostic Media t-shirts, a membership to the website to download the older podcasts, etc. The views expressed by the authors and guests of this unprogram are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself, the host, or Gnostic Media. Go to the website at www.gnosticmedia.com. That's GNOSTICmedia.com. You can reach me directly through the contact form on the website or at contact@gnosticmedia.com. Thanks for listening and thank you for your support. And here is my interview with Kim, Dave, and Freeman Burt. You will respect my authority. Sorry for the bad Eric Cartman impression. And here we go. Enjoy.
Let's get started. And then the first thing that I wanted to, of course, that I want to deal with is that one paper from the California statutes. I already gave it to you, Jan. Okay, so we reviewed this yesterday, Dave. So why don't you go ahead and I'll let you do the reviewing just so that
okay.
So yeah, I think you understand it.
Well, the state has the rights prescribed in this article over persons within its limits to
be exercised in the cases and in the manner provided by law. The state may punish for crime. The state may imprison or confine for the protection of the public peace or health or of individual life or safety. The state may establish custody and restraint of mentally ill persons, insane persons, chronic inebriates, other persons of unsound mind.
Let me just interrupt for a second. Are we starting now?
Yeah, I thought we already did.
All right. Well, why don't we, say that we're starting here, and I'll start off by mentioning that we're here with Kim and Dave, and we did an episode the other day with Clint regarding Dave being arrested and the entire fiasco regarding their son, etc. And so, Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Kim, welcome. I guess sort of welcome back, even though that was Clint's show. This is your first time on just my show, and everybody is familiar with Bert. Hopefully.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
All right. So why don't we go back to what you were reading there and explain what the purpose of this is.
Well, here, I'll just give a quick intro about it. So this is from the California Government Code, and this is basically part of the construction of the code, which means all California regulations, statutes, whatever you want to call them, codes, they all have to abide by what it's written here. And what is interesting about what we're going to review here is basically how these people refer to, like minors, infants, juveniles, adults, and they do this really to try to confuse us and to get us to think that there's really some kind of a divider between all those terms, but in reality, they're all one of the same, and that's what we're going to try to prove to people, that when they're talking about your children being minors or being infants, or you being an adult, the truth is we're all infants in front of the law, the so-called statutory law, the supposed statute that is created by the legislative.
And let me point out that the definition of infant in Bouvier's Law Dictionary is anyone under the age of 21.
Wow, I didn't learn that in nursing school, nor in nutrition school.
So what does it say for minor?
You want to go ahead and get into that?
Well, let's review through this first, and then we can get into the definitions, because we'll have to ask certain questions once we finish reviewing this thing. And then going through the definitions, I think we'll clarify some of the questions that we'll have to make after reading this thing. Go ahead, Dave.
This is Government Code 200, correct?
Yeah, Section 200 to 204.
So okay. I'll start it. All right, I'll go ahead and read from 200. The state has the rights prescribed in this article over persons within its limits to be exercised in the cases in the manner provided by law.
Okay, so let me pause you there for a second. So they're talking about persons. What's interesting about that, Dave?
Well, again, persons can infer an individual or a corporation.
But it's usually part of the corporate body politic, correct?
So why aren't they using the word like people or the word citizens?
Or man, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
Woman.
So that would beg a question right there.
So ambiguity by design?
Well, it's however you say it.
Ambiguous.
Ambiguous, yes.
That ambiguous. By design, true, but actually it's legally correct, because persons are legal creations of man, and that's going to come back to make more sense when we get into the definitions. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. 201. The state may punish for crime.
Okay, so who would they punish? Is that like you punishing your child?
Sounds kind of like it, but it's
yeah, kind of sounds like they act like a parent, huh?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if they're a parent, that means that they would be parent over children.
And we're children, all of us, in the eyes of the law.
If they're punishing you, it's because they're treating you like a child. Okay, go ahead.
202, the state may imprison or confine for the protection of the public, peace, or health, or of individual life or safety.
Okay, so imprison and confine, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. But the question here is, for the protection of the public peace. So what is the public peace?
I think that's something that needs defining.
Whatever they define it as, you know, and then there's all of these things. Yeah, basically, and there it was a section that I saw before that was covering all of these different things that they say that can be disruption for the public peace. So it almost falls under anything.
Yeah, so the question would be, who is the public that they're talking about? And then they say, or health of individual life or safety. So now they're talking about individual life. So whose individual life and whose safety are they talking about?
Good question.
That's a very good question. It's not really clear to me.
Okay, keep going.
And then it says, you know, the next three points, A, B, and C, that we're just about to go into, those are what they're stating, that they can establish custody and restraint of. So hit these three points, Dave.
Sure. 203 states, the state may establish custody and restraint of. And now A, B, and C. Number A is mentally ill persons, insane persons, chronic inebriates, and other persons of unsound mind. B is paupers for the purposes of their maintenance. Letter C is minors for the purposes of their education, reformation, and maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just interject there. Do you see anything else there, Dave?
I'm assuming you're thinking of C.
I mean, like a D or an E or an F. I mean, we've got mentally ill, the poor, and minors. You see anything else there?
Nope.
No.
No other
it.
Category.
Okay. Yes. Go ahead.
Well, 204.
Okay. Hold on a second.
Okay.
This is the one that's the most important one here. The 24 is going to be, 204 is going to be kind of like the icing on the cake. So let's not get to that one. But this one's here. You were held in custody and you were restrained, right? So they're giving you the categories there. So which of those categories fits you?
None of the above.
I mean, are you mentally ill?
No.
No, you're not insane. You're not a drunk. You're not of unsound mind, although, you know, anyone who questions authority is of unsound mind.
Right.
You're not a pauper because you're not asking for them to give you maintenance. Okay. And maintenance is just support. Okay. Financial support, giving you food, whatever those type of things. So that only leaves one possible category, and that's a minor. For the purpose of education, reformation, and maintenance, which so would be minor for the purpose of reforming you, correcting your way of thinking.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now here's where we make the connection with before even looking at the statutes, and you guys, and what makes this interview here really interesting is that you guys have actually seen the effect of these terms from both ends, from the supposed minor's point of view and from the supposed adult view, because you have had a child incarcerated, and you yourself have been incarcerated. So apparently there is no difference between being incarcerated. When you're incarcerated, okay? You can call the prison whatever you want to call it, but you're a prisoner, right?
Yes.
So you learned from your situation with your son that if your son was to go through a trial by jury, what did the judge say he was going to be treated as? Yes.
Well, he's going to be basically treated as an adult, essentially.
Yeah, he would be treated as an adult. So if a minor is going to go through trial as an adult, then that means the minor equals an adult. So if the minor equals an adult, then that means the adult equals a minor.
Yeah, it's total wordplay. It's amazing.
And now this is what, you know, and so what they're doing is they're messing with this, because in Bouvier's Law Dictionary under minor persons, it says one under the age of 21 years while in a state of infancy, one who has not attained the age of a major. The terms major and minor are more particularly used in civil law. The common terms are adult and infant. See infant.
Yeah, so see how they tie those words together?
But it looks like what they've also done is gotten rid of this 21 age, you know, because, you know, here it's supposed to be 18, but then you can't drink until 21, etc. But it looks like they've done away with this and then continued infancy indefinitely.
Yes, infancy is indefinitely. In the eyes of the law, you're a person. You're something that was created. And that's the point that people need to understand, that whenever you're talking about person or any of these words that they use in legal language, those are all man-made terms. They're all fictional, and they can be made to be whatever they want it to be. That's why they say when you're arrested, they're not arresting you, they're arresting your person that just happens to be attached to you.
Right. And then just under infant and infancy, it's just anyone under the age of 21.
Yeah.
Wow. It's words, spells, black magic, ridiculousness.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. You know, and to your point, Kim, abracadabra is from ABCD, abecedarian, etc. That's all spelling and magic. That's exactly what it is, spelling words.
Oh, we're feeling it.
Yeah, so when we look at some of these other terms, some of these other things will become clear, because if we look at this thing from a logical point of view, and we're like, okay, well, we're supposed to be free, we're supposed to be people, real people, so how can this public servants treat us like property?
And not persons, but what they've done then is, have they maybe taken the definition of person and then included it to mean adults and extended infants? I mean, where would they hide that?
It all means the same thing. A person is a person is a person.
Well, a person is a corporation. They're what they are under the law. It's not a human being like you or I.
A person is a fictional term. It doesn't matter how you look at it. The person can be attached to a corporation. You can arrest the person of the corporation. You can arrest the person of a man. It's just a dress that you're wearing. It doesn't mean that that's who you are. So they arrest your dress. You just happen to be wearing the dress. So they arrest you with it. So the question is, who does the person belong to? And that's where the tug of war comes in, because you're saying that whatever person is here that you're wearing, it's yours. They're saying it's theirs. And that's why they get to grab it and call it and tag it and do whatever they want to do with it, because it obviously doesn't belong to you if they can just come and get it at will.
Right. And it doesn't have birthdays past its inception as a quote-unquote corporation, so it stays an infant or a minor.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, in personhood, it's I mean, like, let's say if a corporation is a person, Well, is it a minor? Is it a child? Is it an infant? What is it?
See,
is it an adult?
And this is just it, because here under the definition of person in Bouvier's, it says, this word is applied to men, women, and children who are called natural persons in law. Man and person are not exactly synonymous terms. They admit this. They are not synonymous terms. Mm-hmm. Any human being is a man, which he be a member of society or not, whatever may be the rank he holds, or whatever may be his age, sex, etc. A person is a man considered according to the rank he holds in society, with all of the rights to which the place he holds entitles him, and the duties which imposes him. So they've, you know, right here it's admitting that, you know, a person is not a man which holds those rights. Mm-hmm. And then it's also used to denote a corporation, which is an artificial person. And then three, but when the word persons is spoken of in legislative acts, natural persons will be intended unless something appear in the context to show it applies to artificial persons. Natural persons are divided into males or men and females or women. Men are capable of all kinds of engagements and functions unless by reasons applying to particular individuals. Women cannot be appointed to any public office nor perform any civil functions except those which the law specifically declares them capable of exercising. And then five, they're also sometimes divided into free persons and slaves. Freemen are those who have preserved their natural liberty, that is to say, and then, well, here's Freeman Burt, who have the right of doing what is not forbidden by the law. A slave is one who is in the power of a master to whom he belongs. Slaves are sometimes ranked not with persons, but things. But sometimes they are considered as persons. For example, a Negro is in contemplation of law a person, so as to be capable of committing a riot in conjunction with white men. Persons are also divided into citizens and aliens when viewed with regard to their political rights. Persons are divided into legitimates and bastards, etc. I mean, you know, and then domestic relations, and are divided into parents and children, husbands and wives, guardians and wards, masters and servants, sons, and it's understood as it's understood in law. And then it says, see one toll and Bouvier's. So there you go. There's their whole distorted definition of what a person is.
Yeah. So what's funny in that definition, they say a woman is not capable of holding office until they say she is.
Crazy.
So you could be more capable than Joe over there, but until they say that you are capable, you're not. You know, because in their world, it's their world. It's a legal mumbo jumbo, and we're in it, and we don't even know that we're in it. You know, and that's the sad thing about it. Now, in this next part that we're going to read here, a lot of things are not going to make sense because it appears that we're talking about slavery. Go ahead, Dave.
204. The state may require services of persons with or without compensation in military duty, in jury duty, as witnesses, as town officers, in highway labor, in maintaining the public peace, in enforcing the services of process, in protecting life and property from fire, pestilence, wreck, and flood, and in other cases provided by statute. I mean, what a broad-ranging span of possibilities there. That's
okay. Okay, so then the trick word there would be the state may require services. So, like, you know, a soldier is in the service, right? He has to give service. Mm-hmm. So this, you know, so then what they're doing is they're saying that they can claim rights of these services over you. And then they put in whatever they want under the word statutes.
Yeah, but, you know, if you look at this thing from the 14th Amendment point of view, I mean, or the 13th Amendment, what does the 13th Amendment say about servitude? That's what we're talking about, is service, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to pull it up here.
Okay.
And we made it clear that this is one of the codes they're trying to charge Dave with, what they're charging him with.
Well, I mean, we don't really know.
Which one is that? Which one are you saying?
Just, you know, this government code that we're going over.
Oh, yeah. This is the code that the accusations originate from.
Correct. I just want the audience to be clear on that this is what they're claiming, that they can do everything that they did to Dave. And when we get through this part, I want him to tell the level of ridiculousness and special/prejudicial treatment he got up at the Southwest Detention Center in Murrieta, California.
Yeah, pretty disgusting, but that's actually standard procedure in what they do, and standard procedure is okay. So this is what the 13th Amendment says: neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except — and there's always an except in their laws, and remember, people, this is from the supposedly Constitution for the United States — except as punishment for a crime. So they can demand service from you for punishment of a crime, where of the party shall have been duly convicted. So duly convicted, I mean, what's that? Shall exist within the United States. And they don't tell you what United States they're talking about. Is it the States United, or is it just the jurisdiction of the District of Columbia? Or any place subject to their jurisdiction. And then when we look at the 14th Amendment, and this is the where everything seems to originate from, it says all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. And now I've explained this to Dave and Kim pretty well, and I think now that they have a good grip about just what this citizen of the United States is. So why don't you talk about that a little bit, Dave and Kim?
Well, we've gone over the fact that really the 14th Amendment needs to be abolished and removed, because nobody that it applied to is any longer living.
Mm-hmm. So how come they're treating us or why would anyone claim any kind of a due process or anything under this 14th Amendment?
Well, welcome to the giant reservation / plantation slavery corporation. We're all in it now.
Yeah. Let me just
interject, you guys, because I'm looking over all of this, in the Bouvier's Law Dictionary regarding the definitions of servants, service, etc. So here is one definition of servant. They're pretty wild. Servants, one says Negro or mulatto, and it goes on. But the third one is really interesting because it says menial. Domestics are those who meaning servants. Domestics are those who receive wages, who are lodged and fed in the house of another, and who are employed in his services. Such servants are not particularly recognized by law. They are called menial servants or domestics from living infraharmonia with the walls of the house. The right of the master to their service in every respect is grounded on the contract between them, even though there is no one. No contract. And so this kind of seems to be how they're squeezing this in, because you're the domestic people who live and make wages within the city, right? And so then laborers or persons hired by the day's work or any longer time are not considered servants. And so, you know, they have these sort of you know, just sort of cloudy definitions of these words. And then service, it says, the duty which the tenant owes to his lord by reason of his fee or estate. And then another one is the contracts, the being employed to service or to service another. I mean, you know, so, and here they're calling, you know, you have to service, you have to serve time, you have to do these things by their, you know, creation of these statutes that don't apply to us. So then what they have to do is use the, all of this trick wording, slave, servant, etc., to get us caught up in it.
Well, it's like if I was to say you're in the state of California, and what if I was to say you're in the service of Bert? What would be the difference?
Well,
I mean, they're both imaginary, right?
Well, Bert would be a human being, supposedly, but in the service of would be by this a slave.
Yeah, and you're within some kind of a fictional location, right? I mean, if I say you're in the service of,
sure.
Well, you can't say where it is.
Sure, I mean, California is just you know, magic lines drawn on a map, and then that's it.
Yeah, so when you say I'm in the state of California, well, where is that? You're in the body politic. Well, where does the body politic begin and where does it end? And that's the thing that is very difficult for people to fathom, to be able to digest, is that this is all about control. And so if you have a state, this is the propaganda that they try to sell to us. Is to say, well, the state belongs to the people. Okay, so if the people are supposed to be the sovereigns, and there's all kinds of Supreme Court cases about that the people hold the sovereignty. So if the people hold the sovereignty and they don't have the right to create a servant out of another sovereign, then how can they delegate that power to the legislative body, who will then, on their own, hire this bunch of lower servants that can come right back to you and then make you a servant of the servants.
And exercise more power over somebody
else.
Yes,
more power than they themselves were granted. It doesn't make sense.
No.
I mean, a very basic principle of law is you cannot grant a power greater than you have. I mean, this makes my blood boil when I think about the degree of ignorance that is being exercised by all these people on top of the rest of us. And it's a huge violation of everything that law is supposed to stand for.
It's turned into a gigantic joke. It's a three-ring circus.
Yes, and all it is just a giant parasitic system designed to keep you feeding it.
Well, it appears that truly, I mean, they're apparently supposedly operating lawfully, but at the same time, they're basically orchestrating what their actual plan is. I mean, every hearing that we've been to, they've met ahead of time. The stage is set, and we come into the hearing, and it's as if they've rehearsed everything, and then they're expecting it to flow from A to Z seamlessly, unless we raise our hand and try to interject.
Which makes them furious.
Yes, and I mean, and right now, in the latest situation that you have an attorney that entered into a stipulated agreement, supposedly, and you guys never consented to it.
We never signed anything, stated anything.
You've never even seen it.
Nope.
No.
Nothing has even been materialized into reality except for corporate minutes that we were able to pick up downstairs immediately after the magic gavel hit the magic.
Yeah, so if you look at this thing from a logical point of view, you say, well, okay, how can someone enter me into an agreement that I don't even know what the concepts of the agreement were, were. I didn't know what it is that I was agreeing to. I didn't know what the options were. And no one even gave me a chance to put in my 2 cents. Like, okay, I agree to it. I mean, the most important part of an agreement. How can someone do that on your behalf? I mean, it appears to be nothing but fraud, like some kind of racketeering going on. And the bottom line of all this is that's what it is. It's racketeering.
I don't think there's a better definition.
It is racketeering. There's no doubt. I mean, we made it clear to Zach's attorney, who has made it clear to us on numerous occasions she does not represent us. And when we remind her that he could have never paid her retainer fee, she just rolls her eyes at us. And, you know, I said it to her when she came out and said that they had met privately and had come up with this stipulated amount. I said $14,000 worth of fraud or $31.50 of fraud is fraud. We do not agree to anything.
Does she work for herself or for a firm?
For herself.
Oh, she works for herself. She doesn't have a firm. Well, would you like to recommend her for people?
Over my dead body.
I would recommend her to the sons of the devil.
That would be a good place for her.
Yeah.
Well, we can always give out her numbers so that people can commend her for her great job.
Well, don't give out her phone number, but you can give out her name because she is, in fact, a public official.
I'm just joking anyway, but yeah, feel free.
Yeah. Her name is Sharon Cosgrove, and she lives right here in our community. So she's just one community member abusing other community members.
Okay, so any parent out there that wants to secure the safety of your children and the safety of your funds, contact this attorney or another one similar to it because they will guarantee your protection.
Oh, yes.
And if you believe that...
Wink, wink, sarcasm, sarcasm.
Yeah, we have some oceanfront property in Arizona for you.
They'll put you on the fast track to doing exactly what the court wants you to do in exactly the way they want you to do it. That's what they
will
do for you.
And our so-called judge in this case, who has informed us he owns that courtroom, it's his, and he's in charge of every single thing that happens in there, and he moves the court constantly. Where's I going with that?
About Judge Dickerson.
Yeah, about Judge Dickerson. I lost my thought. I slept about an hour last night. I'm sorry.
I'm not at my sharpest here either. But Jan, can you read this part here? Because this is what's very important. It's a stipulation that this mom and father have apparently being racketeered into. And in order for this stipulation to be lawful, it must meet this very basic principles of it.
Okay, is...
I know what I was going to say.
Is that the agreement between counsel? All right, so let me just read this real quick, Kim, and then I'll pass it to you.
Okay.
And this is an agreement between counsel respecting business before the court. It is not binding unless assented to by the parties or their representatives, and most stipulations are required to be in writing.
And there's court cases to back it up. So this is not even just an empty definition. So this counsel that was hired supposedly to protect the rights of this family has entered into an agreement without getting the consent of the parties and definitely not in writing.
Absolutely.
So if this is not fraud, I don't know what it is.
Exactly.
And we still have not received an actual, again, breakdown from the court. You know, obviously.
We never will.
We haven't even received the bill yet for the new quote-unquote stipulated amount, so, you know.
You mean the statement, because there would never be an itemized bill.
Correct. It's a statement. That's all it is. But we have not received even one of those yet.
Yeah, and what's funny in this particular case is that in the courtroom, the judge demanded that the DA's office provide you with a detailed account of what it is that they wanted to cover with all the money that they were asking for. And somehow that requirement now has disappeared and a number has just dropped out of the sky with no justification whatsoever, except perhaps a threat of if you don't pay it, XYZ may happen to you or your son.
Oh, yeah, that definitely was added to the end of the
law. And that is a primary requirement of racketeering, is an exchange of money for fear.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly okay. What's going on.
And this goes on every day, people, every day. They use children as the fear factor to extract money from people. They use people's freedom to extract money from them in order for them to be able to get out of jail, to get out of some charge that they don't understand, some threat of 25 years or whatever in prison. This is the game that they play, and this is pure racketeering. And it has to stop at some point.
And I don't know, somehow God keeps giving us the courage when we need it to keep persevering through this thing, because we've made the commitment that we are going to expose this for what it is. But what I was going to say about the judge in his one of the hearings where he rambled on for 51 minutes, he referred to that Southwest Justice Center as a lot of things, but he never referred to it as a real court. And Bert, you might be able to elaborate on that better than me, but he, you know, what it really is, what that center out there really is, because it's not a real court.
No, it's a law enforcement center. That's all it is. It's a law enforcement center for the executive branch of the state. Just because something is called a court doesn't make it a court. I mean, I don't want to insult the mafia or anything, but you could be in the basement of some building and you could be in a courtroom.
Yeah.
You know, they could have their own clerk there with a big cigar in his mouth, taking your fee to enter the court.
And if you don't pay, they take a finger instead of your child.
Yeah. And then, you know, the jury will be playing poker while they deliberate your fate.
Yep.
You know, it's no different. And what goes on in this court.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, pretty disgusting.
Yes, it is.
Well, Dave, go ahead.
Just was saying, it absolutely is. We've never been through anything remotely close to this level of ridiculousness.
Dave, would you like to give a personal accounting of the events?
I'll do my best. I'm not sure exactly where to begin. If I just begin on Friday morning, you know.
Sure.
But, you know, we've been kind of potentially suspecting that something like this might come up. But
sure.
And
you and I have even talked about this a number of times, that they might pull this, as, you know, as we turn up the heat on them.
That's correct. You know, and we had our own concerns about the safety of Zachary as well as myself as we were beginning to compile these restraining orders. You know, the filing of these things.
We knew it was going to make them very angry.
We knew something, and we were getting so much resistance in the first several attempts and not getting everything done like they wanted us. So we kept getting basically roadblocked, even for minor details and whatnot. So we'll kind of go forward to, or back to 11-1 on Friday. I was heading to work. I live about less than 2-3 miles from my office, and I live on the side of town, or we live on the side of town of Murrieta that is unincorporated, and we're divided by a road that basically separates the incorporated and unincorporated areas, of which, since we've lived in the house we live in now since June, I have never seen one single Murrieta Police Department vehicle ever on the side of the line that's unincorporated, ever. I've seen Temecula police, and I've seen sheriffs. So this particular morning, we're driving down toward my office, and we're almost halfway there, and all of a sudden I see a myriad of police car coming up the road my direction, opposite me. I come to an intersection. This police officer, I have to stop, and he's oppositely facing me. He turns a left, does a U-ey, and as soon as my light turns green, he does a right turn and pulls in behind me. And I knew right then and there that this guy was following me. I knew it intuitively. We went down a couple stoplights, and right as I was turning on the main street that my office resides on, off of, his lights flipped on. And I told my daughter, I said, I'm being pulled over right now and probably being arrested.
Did this officer ever once enter his legal jurisdiction?
No.
And so I pulled over. My daughter, 17-year-old, is in the car with me, the truck, and officer comes up to the window. I roll down the window, and he says my name, and he says, get out, step out of the car. And I stepped out of the car, and I said, what's this about? And he goes, turn around. And the next thing I know, I hear clanking metal, and he's got my hands together up in the middle of my back, and he's starting to put handcuffs on me. And I said, what are you doing? He goes, you're being arrested. You are under arrest for the manufacture and of illicit substance, as well as child endangerment. And, you know, I was blown away. As he's doing this, he starts taking my hands and shoving them up about as high as my
and this is the lead defendant in your case, is that correct?
Yes,
this,
it is.
This is somebody that we have already sued. We have sent him a summons
regarding that lawsuit months ago.
He is the one that led a home invasion on our home on April 20th of this same year. And this same individual was exactly the same one that showed up and arrested me. And as I was saying, he was shoving my hands up in the middle of my back, and I was as relaxed as I could be, quite frankly. I just couldn't believe the surreality of it, and I was trying to just keep my...
Did he ever say that he had a warrant, or did he show you a warrant? Was anything ever presented to justify this arrest?
Nothing was presented, and unfortunately, in my particular state of mind, I did not ask for an arrest warrant. I wished I had it at the moment, at this point, but I didn't at that moment.
It's hard to think.
So up to this point, and we're talking this happened on Friday, up to this point, this is Monday, you've still not seen a warrant, and you've made multiple requests for it. Is that correct?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So we've been denied it outright. We have been told.
So that you were arrested illegally without a warrant.
Yes.
By a cop who was not in his jurisdiction. What was that officer's name?
Brendan Carney, Carney.
Brendan Carney. And so there you have it. This is the guy who likes to violate the Constitution and people's rights, this officer Brendan Carney.
Yeah, he is no doubt one of the boss's favorites.
So this guy is basically just he would be like a thug for them, right? In the racketeering. So he goes around, and anybody who gets out of line, he goes and he beats up for the city government corporate criminals.
That's correct.
So
okay, but here's the interesting thing: is that he's also one of the people that we were trying to get a restraining order on.
Right, and and he's one of the ones dodging these restraining orders, mm-hmm. And so the judge notified him and the PD. That you guys were trying to serve them so that they could go out and arrest you, Dave, before you got them served. Is that correct?
Well, here's the funny thing is that we were trying to get a restraining order, and what they're supposed to do is they're supposed to give you – if you show that you in fact have fear for your safety, which now we can obviously see the result of not having the restraining order – they're supposed to give you at least a 30-day temporary restraining order. Well, the court where we turned in the The paperwork for that did not give us a restraining order, temporary. And now it appears that the whole thing was pre-planned to allow them to arrest David prior to issuing us any kind of a restraining order, because now we have a hearing
you
coming
mean
up.
Issuing them any kind of issuing them any kind of restraining order.
Well, we're just trying to serve them with the summons to appear.
Right. Well, Bert said issuing us a restraining order. He had it backwards. That you just oh. you're issuing.
Well,
them.
No, actually, they give you the restraining order to protect you.
Right.
So you're getting the restraining order.
We get yeah. it. Restraining order belongs
got
to
you.
Us.
Got you. Got you.
Mm-hmm. And they paused it, apparently, so that they would be able to do whatever intimidation tactics they were going to do, because they, obviously, with the restraining order in place, they would not be able to arrest David. It would have to be now someone that's not under restraint. And besides, we're restraining the governor as well, because all these people actually work under the governor.
Yeah, that's you right. got to follow the chain of command, no doubt about it. That makes total sense.
He's the CEO of California and the big boss of the legislature that has lots of magic paper and magic pens up there writing all kinds of crazy legislation to basically generate funds for the state.
Yeah, so now David basically has been injured physically, mentally, financially due yeah. to the fact that the temporary restraining order was not given to him.
Absolutely.
There you go, in a nutshell.
It couldn't be any clearer that the motivation for what they did was
they've been
inspired
they've
by
been
what we did.
They've been sitting on this fabricated stuff since April 20, almost 7 months ago, and just happened to find it necessary to do this on November 1st when we are supposed to have our hearing on these restraining orders on November 12th.
Mm-hmm.
So I might add that when I was pulled over and as I stepped out of the car, two other unmarked squad cars pulled up behind the police officer. So there's no doubt I was being scoped. They were probably up in around my neighborhood planning for this whole thing. I have no doubt that if I would have either shown up at my office, they would have probably just come in and arrested me at my place of business.
Even though we've already informed them that if they wanted to arrest Dave, all they had to do was call him and he would turn himself in and deal with whatever had to be dealt with. But no, they had to do this the way they did it and traumatize our daughter yet again to where she's going to need some therapy too, because that poor kid is just, she's torn up beyond.
Yeah, and that's the other point that I didn't highlight is that during this whole deal going on, David and Kim have been more than submissive, okay, to these people. They have said, look, we will do whatever you want us to do. You want to cut my arm? Go ahead and cut it, okay? Just don't go out of your way to torture us. You don't have to do that. Whatever it is that you want, we'll give it to you.
And
we just want to make sure that you people act honorably.
I mean, I offered when they took Zach the second time, I said, you know, this isn't his fault that we quit calling in on this bogus contract. Put me in jail. Put a 12-year-old in jail for something that his parents did.
Yes, and I mean this.
Hold on. Something that his parents did under duress. Let's be
under
clear
duress.
On that.
Absolutely.
Yes, I mean they had their child in prison, and they were coerced into signing an agreement so that their son
could be taken out
of prison.
And I was there in the courtroom that day, and Judge Paul Dickerson said that he would leave your son in jail for up to a month if you guys did not sign that document. So he was holding your son ransom for you to sign that with no justification. He was punishing a 12-year-old to force the parents to sign a document.
Yes, sir.
I will also add to that in our transcripts, he also states that it's not mandatory. I mean, we don't have to do it. It's an option. So yeah. we don't have to sign this.
You have free will. You don't have to sign it, but I will keep your son in jail for at least 30 days. But it's totally up to you to decide whether or not you will do this or not.
They say you're free to do whatever you want, but you won't leave here with your head on your shoulders.
Yep. That's right. The day he yapped on for 51 minutes.
And then you sign it and put under duress again, you know.
Yep. They could have chopped my arms off. I would have done it to get him out of there. They were torturing him in there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for those who are interested, we did talk about that in the episode with Clint the other day. What was that, yesterday or day before, regarding what they did to your son in prison with blood on the walls and feces everywhere and things like that, him unable to get a drink of water for a couple of days.
Yep.
It was pretty disgusting, but anyway, okay, well go ahead. I don't want to interrupt.
Go on, Dave. Tell some of the stuff.
Well, I'll go ahead and state they ended up, I got in the car, the guy just cranked the cuffs down. I mean, it was very uncomfortable. I actually made him stop and undo my cuffs and loosen them because they were, you know, uncomfortable. And I'm sitting in a seat that has a preformed plastic backing, so you can't even lean back in it. But anyways, we went to the police station. They searched me when they first arrested me on the spot. They searched me at the police station. They made me sit and wait probably for about an hour for nothing. They read me my Miranda rights, I guess, shortly after I got there, and I said, I'll remain silent, and I'm not going to say a word. And they just let me sit there, and then they took me back in the car, and it was going to haul me off to the jail, but as we're leaving the enclosure there at the police station, I noticed the very large new tank, military tank, and I've heard all the stats about it, but I just commented. I said, oh, looks like a pretty big tank over there, like maybe something you might have gotten from Homeland Security. And he chimed in willfully that, yes, absolutely, we got that as part of a Homeland Security grant. And I said, is there really that kind of crime that we need something of that magnitude in this city? And he goes, no, not really. It's for show of force. It's basically for show of force at these events that they have around the city, so that people know that they have heavy duty artillery, and it's all fear tactics.
And in this town with no crime, they now have one of those big boxes that you can elevate up into the air so you can look over a crowd. And they love to, for like the city birthday and, you know, just community functions, these cops in their SWAT, you know, they're just all in this military gear now, and they get elevated up above the crowd and just watch people with their binoculars and stuff. Got to generate some more crime for the city. Got to justify their reason for being.
So then anyways, went back to the jail. I was escorted in, and at the very front desk, they proceeded to start to try to ask me questions such as, where were you born? And I said, I don't want to answer that. And they got really disturbed and upset and said, well, you're going to have to answer that question for the judge or the magistrate, which I never got to talk to. But anyways, I did not answer that question. I basically signed one form initially when I was presented there. Can't remember exactly what that one was, unfortunately.
Something about your property?
That was the second one. The first one was just kind of basically saying that I had been received at a certain point. And both things that I signed, even the one about my property, I signed under duress at the bottom under my signature. And the one regarding my property, where it said that they had the right to search my mail and my belongings, I lined through everything that said they had the right to search anything. And the guy looks at it and says, oh, you can line through that all you want. We can still do it.
And unfortunately, he did have two flash drives in his pocket that he didn't hand to Macy that had a lot of information on them about our case.
About my business, too.
About
and
our
my finances.
Business and finances. And, you know, part of the reason maybe that they held a bond and a body for 18 hours was because they were busy uploading things.
So anyways, they started having me undress at the front desk, taking my shoes and socks off and my shirt, you know, right in the entrance. And then finally they escorted me down to another area where they basically told me that I was going to have a body search because of the charges. And so we get to this other room, and there's looks like it's about at least 10 by 12. And then there was two double doors that could have easily been closed, but in fact they were wide open to a room of at least five or six other individuals on computers sitting at workstations, but they're all looking right our direction. And these guys, they pretty much made me undress and bend over and spread them. And I'm not kidding you. When I turned around, every one of those sick, demented, twisted, power-hungry freaks was looking, and I swear, I thought, you know, I don't know, I'm not impressed, and what they did was grossly uncalled for, and I swear they got enjoyment out of it.
Everybody knows that you're going to get checked when you go into a jail. We all have friends, family, some of us have been there. I haven't, but, you know, family members have. And they do cavity searches and things like that. We know this. But it's usually in a private room. There may be it's usually a same-sex officer that does it. I mean, I've been a psych nurse for almost 20 years. We had to search kids when I did adolescents to make sure they didn't have something they could hurt themselves or someone else. But it was done in a professional manner in a closed room with same-sex individuals and more than one. So there's a witness. I mean, come on, really? And you open up double doors to a room full of people sitting at desks.
Yeah, and
you've got to be kidding.
And they asked me, of course, a bunch of questions about my preferences. And, of course, they assured me that all the questions were only for my own benefit so they could be sure and place me somewhere with someone compatible.
So I guess if he wanted to have all kinds of promiscuous behavior in there, they would have put him on the hall that he could have enjoyed such activities.
I'll have to send you the inmate orientation sometime, Jan and or Bert. But it even says in here, I'll read you one thing where it says, let's see here. You're not allowed to have forcible sex, but it doesn't say you can't have sex.
And prohibited acts, forcible sexual assault will get you 25 to 50 points, whatever that means.
So they're on a point system there. But so once they did this search, so to speak, and I showed my wares, which was a very humiliating experience, especially, like I said, when I knew that they were really going out of their way to humiliate me. I was put in a holding room.
And left there for hours.
With at least three other guys that had been picked up within the most recent 24 hours. I'm trying to think here. Then, because I got moved around to several different holding areas during that whole day. At one point, they pulled me out and walked me down a very long walkway and basically told me that I was going to have to give my DNA. And right before they did that, they had handed me a piece of paper that had what's called a phone pin, which is just the four-letter pin number that I was given to give me my access for my one free phone call. And when I went to the station where they were doing this DNA testing, I said, I am not consenting to this. I'm not going to give up any part of my body to anybody against my consent or my will. It's against my spiritual beliefs, it's against everything. I'm not doing it. And at that moment, this guy that was working with me, he called this sergeant who stepped out into the hallway. And this guy was probably 6'2", 350, 400 pounds. And this guy responded like someone's dad and said, "What? He's not going to do that?" And he starts yelling down the hall at me, "Why aren't you going to do this? And when I told him, he said, "What's your religion?" And I said, "My religion or my spiritual beliefs are between me and my Creator and are of no concern of yours. And I am exercising the rights that are mine." And then they tried to proceed and convince me that there was some check they were going to run through for the state to see if I qualified or not to have it or not. And then he says, "Well, it looks like you qualify." And I said, "You mean I don't have to have it?" And he goes, "No, you have to have it." And I said, "No, I'm not having it." At that moment, about four other officers entered the room. So there were six guys surrounding me. I shouldn't say about it. It was four. There were six officers surrounding me. And at that moment, I said, "I would like every officer's name in this room. You guys are crowding me. You're threatening me and trying to coerce me into signing something or into doing something against my will. And I'm not doing it." And when I said that, four of them laughed and said, "Oh, come on now. You got to be kidding." And then they walked away. So it was obvious they were there for exactly that purpose. So went back to my holding room, and I got to just, specify a few things. I mean, we all know that any type of a holding facility is not going to be a great place to be. But, you still treat people with respect, period. If you expect respect, you got to treat a person with respect. And one particular guy, they were walking down the hall. They were going to search his stool for, I guess, potential contraband. Somehow they do it with some of these people after they've been there for a while. And as he's walking down the hall, someone moved in front of him, and he made a comment about maybe losing his load right there on the floor. And they didn't like that. They threw him in a room across from the holding room I was in. We could see him through the window. And then they wrote in big, big words, "Potty watch." And so every time officers went by, they looked at the window and they yelled, "Potty watch," in a joking way, just to, make it obvious to everyone that this guy's on potty watch. And finally, the guy took a crap in a plastic bag, and the officer comes around and then totally demeans the guy because he said, "I wasn't watching. Now you're going to have to do it again."
So they left him in there.
And then they left him in there with the door part closed. And at some point, I knew there was an indication that he was taking care of business, and a couple officers are there watching him, collecting his stuff. But I mean, it was very, very, very
animalistic.
Demeaning and animalistic, exactly.
Can you imagine anyone else calling themselves a professional in any other capacity, anywhere, getting away with such behavior? It's disgusting.
So from that point, I believe it was probably around 5 or so when I talked to Kim. I did talk to her from a payphone, but I called collect from inside this holding cell. So it was a collect call. It wasn't my free call. But I spoke to Kim, and she was in the process at that moment of preparing for the interview with you guys. And it was literally...
And I have the bail's bondsman sitting next to me on the couch.
Yes. So it was literally 25 minutes from going on air, and she was beside herself. And shortly thereafter, I was moved to the actual cell that I stayed in through the next day till I was finally released. But there was no phone that I had access to in there, so I never got to make my free phone call. I slept in this place all night long.
And mind you, we had posted bail, and it showed up on their own judicial tracking computer thing that tells you where inmates are and what their status is. From 5:30 on, it said, "Bail posted." And this poor bondsman says he's never seen anything like it in his career. He says, "Yeah, they'll delay things for 3 or 4 hours, sometimes just be, they're not filling out their paperwork or whatever. I mean, I've been a nurse long enough. I know you can do a discharge fast and you can do it slow. And if you get a lazy nurse who wants to take 10 coffee breaks in the middle of your discharge, it's going to take you hours to get out of the hospital." And it's the same thing with them down there. But this was to excess, and they held my bond, which they set at $50,000, so I had to pay 10% of that. And I'm telling you what, this whole situation is
a racket.
Well, it's a racket, but they're trying to destroy the family Dortch in every way, including financial. And they held the bond as accepted, and they held the body too. under that roof for 18 full hours simultaneously.
So I will say, you know, when I talked to Kim and I knew she was posting the bond, the bail, I didn't know what was going on. I mean, when it came to, you know, late night and I'm still there, I had no idea what was going on and I had no contact. So there was a point where I'm like, I don't know how long I'm going to be here. I didn't know if a hearing was going to be set. I hadn't talked to anybody. And,
And they had already informed him that they don't adhere to any 24-hour rule that you're to be seen by a magistrate. They count it as 48 hours and the weekend doesn't count. But who set that bail? Dave never saw a magistrate. He never made a plea. Nothing. He never saw anyone official. I mean, if these yahoos that did the things they did, that's as official as it gets out there.
So finally on Saturday morning, probably about, I guess it was probably about 9:30, was I was in my the holding cell with this other inmate, and all of a sudden I heard someone come on the speaker and said, "Dorch, get your bed and roll your things and roll them up." And so this guy said, "It looks like you're going." And so I was, you know, cautiously optimistic at that point. But I got all my stuff rolled up. Then you have to wait for them to unlock your cell door. Well, the cell door opens into a common eating cafeteria type area. And when the door opens, I have a room, which is completely empty. All the inmates are in their rooms, which they can look out of the rooms into this common area. This common area is overseen by these officers up in this high
loft
area, I guess a couple stories up, but they're looking down through their ivory tower windows on the rest of the facility, but it's kind of a darkened area. And I couldn't see anybody up there, so I set my stuff down. I walked over to intercom and asked the guy, you know, I pushed the button and said, "I'm ready." And he says, "Sit down. I didn't tell you to get up. I see you." And literally, it's just amazing. And everyone's there. Unfortunately, I think most of the people in there are so used to that behavior that they put up with it, and it's just the way it is. They expect it. They don't feel like they're being belittled or, talked down to. I really tried to talk to quite a few people in there to find out how many light bulbs were on and, what the potentials were. And I was somewhat disappointed, quite frankly. But so let's see here. By really about, I think it was 10:30 or 11, we had already, me and the two other guys that were being released at the same time, had already changed back into street clothes. We were in a holding area. And wouldn't you know, right before the guy, the officer says, "We're going to get to go home," he says, "We just have one last physical, exit physical exam." And so wouldn't you know it, they send a nurse around with thermometers and tongue depressors and, of course, a cheek swab. So they're trying to tout this thing about a streptococcus infestation there in the jail. They tested the first two guys with a thermometer that did not work, never gave a reading, and gave an error sign. When she got to me, she says, "Oh, it looks like your temperature's rising. You're at 99 and going up." And then she started to try to accuse me of coming there and getting everyone sick. I was not sick, Jan.
and still isn't.
And so, you know, I was basically feeling like I was being railroaded again. And then they proceeded to try to do a swab for my cheek. And I said, "You got to be kidding." I said, "I already declined the DNA test. I'm not giving up any part of my body, and I'm not doing it this time either." And they put up a big stink about it. You wouldn't believe it. And finally, the nurse said, "You know what? I think he's okay." So finally, she got the guy to back off. And literally, as we're walking to the elevator, the officer says, "Oh, don't worry about it. That test, we just began that test program about a month ago. It's not any big deal." So they made a huge deal out of it. I also forgot to mention that when I went when I was at those double doors and I had talked to the one officer to get let out of that main holding room area, when I had gathered my stuff up together, and he called me to the intercom and said, your release today is contingent on you doing the DNA test. Are you going to do it? And I said, no, I haven't talked to anyone. I haven't talked to a magistrate. I haven't talked to your OR, which is another type of officer that may serve a similar function. I didn't talk to anybody. I said, I need to talk to anyone, to one of these individuals. They did not let me. He told me to sit down. And then the next thing I know, the door just magically opens and they let me out. But they told me they were going to slap on misdemeanor charges and tried to basically scare me again by saying they're going to throw on these extra charges. And I said, that's fine. I'm okay with that. I'll deal with it later.
And they popped up on that screen that shows what they're charged under for a little while, because the bail bondsman told me, oh, they're adding more charges. You're going to have to pay more money for your percent, you know, of the bail bond. And now it's magically gone. It's not on there anymore. I wish I had taken a screenshot of it, but I didn't. We just have the one with the two remaining charges. But they're just playing games and making idle threats and real threats. And here we are.
So pretty much that sums up that particular day. You know, when I got outside, the bail bondsman was there to pick me up. And ironically, it happened to be a patient of mine, believe it or not, Jan. And we called this guy kind of out of the blue. Actually, it was a recommendation from one of the guys in one of the cells there. And he said, hey, call this guy. And I already had a number I knew in my phone for one of the other patients of mine who is a bail bondsman. And even though I had that number in my phone, I said, Kim, go ahead and just talk to this other guy that I'd already talked to find out from my, what do you call that number? The booking number?
The booking number. Yeah, we're new to this, guys. We're not career criminals. These terms are not familiar to us.
But you mean they don't teach you this in nursing and optometry school?
And they don't give you a definition list when you show up so that you have any idea how this sick system works.
You know, and when people put it in context, you know, okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's be clear about this. Dave is a doctor and Kim is a nurse, okay? And this is the type of people that the Marietta PD go after.
Apparently, there is so little real crime in this town, they are desperate to justify their means for existence. I mean, in this economic meltdown in California, we've lost so much population out of this town that we're down to a four and a half day school week where early outs and, you know, the kids barely go to school anymore, which is fine with me because I'm about had it with this Common Core Prussian education, if you want to call it education system. And as soon as our son is through this Mickey Mouse court system, we're going full on homeschool. I'm done with this. But, you know, we've lost population out of this town, yet they tell us they've added 60 to 80 officers to this city. And now we have tanks that they've outfitted with $130,000 worth of guns and ammo and silencer generators so they can roll silently down the streets with quote unquote seized assets. Well, those people have quite a bit of our seized assets from April 20, and we've still gotten not one thing back. And Dave had never been charged with anything until 11-1, and every bit of it is completely fabricated and unjustifiable. I mean, you know, it's just a wreck. The whole thing is a train wreck.
And it's an obvious retaliation to the attempt to file the restraining orders. So
that's that story. That chapter of it, anyway.
Bert, anything you want to add before we wrap this episode up?
Well, I just wanted to touch up on a couple of more on the definitions, like on the thing of minor. Because, I mean, people need to keep in mind how he was treated, okay? He was treated like a child. Okay? And it says here, under Black's Law, first edition, this is the first Black's Law dictionary that came out. It says, an infant or person who is under the age of legal competence, a term derived from the civil law, which describes a person under a certain age as less than so many years. So the key thing here is they're talking about someone of not legal competence. Yet, the supposed attorney that is supposedly representing their son is saying that their supposedly not competent son is competent enough to make legal decisions with her in absence of his mother and father.
That's right. And he was a big enough minor, baby, infant, adult, whatever, you know, interchangeable terms they want to use.
I've never even heard of parents hiring a lawyer to defend the son and then the lawyer refusing to, you know, to do anything or, you know, to turn on the parents like this woman has.
Well, I don't think any other parents have ever filed documents like we filed saying we would like you to prove that we're under your jurisdiction or part of your body politic, period. And we would like to know how it is. We accidentally somehow went into some three-way sick parenting agreement with the state of California. And you get to trump us when there is no precedent ever set that we are unfit parents to this child who we adore. You know, people who know us well know our past story, and that is we had years and years and years of infertility. Dave and I were married over 7 years before we had Macy, and another almost 5 years till we had Zach, and he was just a bonus because there was no medical intervention for that. So, I mean, these kids they were begged for from God. We wanted them. We have been the best parents we could be. And how this has all happened is truly beyond my comprehension. We're good people. I'm not just being biased. We are. We want to leave this planet a better place than it was when we got here. And I'm just begging the people who listen to Jan's show to help us out because they're trying to break us. And we're doing this not only for ourselves and so that our own kids and their grandkids have a better world to live in, but we are just tenacious enough and stubborn enough, these two Libran people who want to see some balance and some justice on this planet, that we're taking up this fight for you guys too, so that you actually have true rights to the product of your matrimony, your womb and your loins, and that the state needs to keep their grubby little hands off of it unless there is true harm going on, and that needs to be established before you arrest a child for doing something stupid and automatically suspend parents' rights for up to 6 hours, which is quote unquote legal and lawful, but I'm here to tell you it's immoral, it's unethical, and it is wrong. And what has happened to the American people that we are so dumbed down and numb and drunk on Babylon's wine that we don't care what's happening to our neighbors and what's happening in the legislature, and that these so-called other human beings are running roughshod over us. These are just people wearing costumes with religious symbol badges, thinking they are superhuman. And I refuse to see them as that anymore. And I'm begging for any true moral law enforcement agents out there, you better step up and start being some kind of oath keeper to this Constitution and starting to help us change this thing, because we're done with this kind of abuse. And I'm hoping that Dave and Kim Dortch are not the only ones who are going to hold you to task if you abuse your authority and your office. period.
Yes, yes. And what I wanted to bring up is that people need to think about this one source of all this sickness, and that is those people who call themselves your representatives. They're the ones that are writing all this insane legislature that they know doesn't apply to you. But they write it in a manner so that those people at the bottom who are executing the force will believe it. And they know what they are doing. All those people in the legislative body, they know what they're doing.
Yes, they do.
You know, so those people, you need to hold them accountable for the crimes that they're perpetrating on a daily basis on you, your family, and your friends.
And don't fight it with a lawyer. Fight it yourself and find someone such as Bert or someone else to help you do it and shut this system down.
And I just want to interject here that I've known you guys, Kim and Dave, and your kids for a number of years. And I've always considered you guys sort of the exemplary family. And, you know, you guys communicate well. You and your kids are very honest and open with each other, obviously, except for this Crayola bit. But, you know, it's you guys... When I think of how a family should be, and when I've been to your place, which is a number of times, and seen how you all interact with each other, you know, I'm just dumbfounded. And it's like, wow, look how great they get along. Look how well they communicate. You know, the house is always very clean and neat. Everything is, you know, everything is taken care of. And yet, here these guys have been set out to be a target for these, you know, these costume-wearing clowns of the city of Marietta and Riverside County.
Yeah, now here's the other point. This family here, their biggest crime, this is the real crime, okay? He said they actually ask questions. These people don't like to be asked anything. They want you to take whatever they give you and swallow it whole and not ask a single question about it. But this family is actually asking questions, which these people know that if they answer, it will cause their house of cards to fall apart. And that's why they don't answer anything.
Yep. And, you know, we have family members in law enforcement and we have a few friends. And I know there are some good people out there in that occupation. I know that. And I'm just asking you, the people with integrity and ethics and morals, you got to start working from the inside to change it now, yesterday, mm-hmm. because you're going to go down with it because, you know, we're done. We're going to do everything in our power to leave it wounded badly and bleeding and try to change it to some degree, because I know this is happening to lots and lots of people that don't have the means, the intelligence, the tenacity, or the drive to fight back. So here we are. We're in it, and we've committed to doing it. So everybody, in whatever capacity that you can, without, you know, taking food off of your own table and, you know, time away from living a balanced life, do what you can do.
Yes, and remember that all these people that are causing all this havoc, you know, by overdoing all this law enforcement thing, who are they? There are brothers, there are sisters, there are friends, there are neighbors. They're us. And if we cannot stand up for law, who will? No one will.
And in the words of Pastor Martin Niemöller, first they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out, because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out, because I was not a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. So, Dave, Yes. What is the single most important concept that you would like people to take away from Gnostic Media episode number 184?
The thing that I would like people to understand is that, you know, we didn't ask for this, or at least knowingly. this is one of these things that, we wanted to live life day to day like everyone else, and try to avoid confrontation and try to minimize having this kind of situation. I mean, this was the last thing that I thought we were going to be dealing with, but nevertheless, we are dealing with it. And, fortunately in the process, or prior to having to deal with it, we have already been researching and educating ourselves about things in this plant, on this planet, that are, you know, that need to be changed. So I guess the biggest thing would be, stand up for what you truly want and believe in, and make a difference, not for yourself. Don't try to live in comfort so that you have a cush, posh life. Think about your kids and your grandkids and your neighbors and your friends and their kids. And, you know, you've got to make the change that you want to see.
Well said.
Amen to that.
That's...
Be that change.
I happen to be married to a man of integrity, and I am very proud of him for how he has conducted himself through this entire thing. And I'm telling you, if the cameras were turned on these people, it's some kind of sick riot mentality, because I don't believe that the men and women who did the things that have been done today, if individually they were to try to do them, they would ever in a million years do it.
That's true.
I'm very proud of my wife, too. I mean, her strength has been there for me when I've been weak, and vice versa. And then our daughter, you know, our family has been more drawn together. I mean, these horrific things work very hard to break a family apart.
Because we're not going to allow it.
It puts you on, on watch for a lot of different things, and makes emotional crises come up that you just don't anticipate. But we've weathered some major storms. We've had breakdowns, and we've built back up. And I'm telling you, we have built up a foundation that is stronger than it's ever been.
That's right.
Amen.
Thanks, guys, for helping us tell our story and educate people. And now let's mobilize and let's see some action.
Like in Animal House when Jumbo, she goes, "Let's do it!"
That's right. That's right.
All right, guys. Anything else?
I think that's it for this time.
Thank you, Jan.
Thank you
guys, and hang tough. It's such insanity, and I've been there to see so much, and. Thankfully, we did get Sheriff Stanley Sniff served today.
Awesome.
So,
congratulations, Jan and Sarah.
That is so awesome.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.